If you and your family are taking a trip to the Orlando area this year, your little ones deserve to stroll in style. Lugging a stroller from home can be an annoying and frustrating part of the first leg of your journey, and renting those hard plastic strollers from Disney theme parks can be both costly and uncomfortable for your kids. Well, I'm here to tell you about the solution to your child transport problems, and that's Kingdom Strollers. Kingdom Strollers is a Disney-featured stroller and crib provider that does exactly what you're looking for at a great price. Not only is it less expensive than renting a stroller from the theme parks themselves, but these are padded luxury models with features like drink holders, canopies, storage baskets, and more. What's more, you keep this stroller with you for your entire trip, whereas park-rented strollers, you gotta return them before you leave the park that day. This is gonna make those late-night post-fireworks bus stop queues so much easier, and dad's shoulders are gonna thank you for it. So, how does it work? You just go to kingdomstrollers.com and make your selection on the stroller or crib that's right for your child. Just let the good folks over there know a great time for delivery and pickup and where you'll be staying. You can pick your stroller or crib up from the luggage stand at your resort and then drop them back off there at the end of your stay. So pack light, leave your stroller at home, and save up to a whopping 50% versus park price stroller rentals when you visit kingdomstrollers.com.
Please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Welcome aboard the Walt Disney World Express Monorail, our highway in the sky. For those of you standing, please hold on to the handrails throughout our journey and stay clear of the doors. For the comfort of others, no smoking, please. Thank you.
Hiya, folks. You're listening to Two Men and the Mouse, episode 100 on the White Dragon Podcast Network, recorded live on February 29th, 2016. This is your everyday guide to the magic of Walt Disney World and the larger Disney universe beyond it. My name's Kevin Kessler, and I'm joined, as always, by my good buddy, Peter Mandel.
Kevin Kessler.
Peter Mandel.
How are you?
100 episodes older.
I know. A week late, but worth the wait.
Most certainly. I can't believe we're here 100 episodes. But, folks, we are two lifelong Disney fanatics who have managed to keep the magic of Disney alive in our lives every day. And we want to share that magic with you. So pull up a chair, gather the family, or pop in your favorite set of headphones, and let's experience the magic together. Pete.
Kevin.
Fair in 100 episodes, I'd have this opening down by now.
Nah.
I've literally said these words 100 times in my life, and I still sometimes stumble over them.
I know. Why bother learning it?
I know. To this day, like, if you didn't have notes in front of me here, I probably couldn't do it. Literally, have done it 100 times, and I probably can't do it.
That's fine.
Yeah. Here we are, 100 episodes later. 2 years and 100 episodes.
Yep. Hard to believe. Feels longer, doesn't it?
Yeah. Like, if you think about, like, where we were 100 episodes ago, little card table in your old store.
Yep.
Like, you know, sitting there. I remember it was cold. We were wearing jackets and, you know, not knowing if anyone was going to listen. You know, so 2 years, 100 episodes, and 10,000 listeners later, and here we are.
Yeah, not bad.
The big 100. And we have got the biggest e-ticket attraction in the history of the show here for you guys, folks. It is going to be an interview with a Disney legend. We've got Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy, coming at you later on in the show. But first, it's time for the news, Peter Mandel.
Hit me.
The news, as always, brought to you by our good friend, Dave Weichert of Magical Travel, who will plan your Disney vacation for you at no additional cost to you. Dave Weichert is an expert on all things Disney and now Universal Studios. So you can contact Dave Weichert for all of your Disney and Universal needs. So worldwide news. Ready to get started on that?
Yep.
Google Maps Street View may be coming to Walt Disney World soon.
Wow.
Like, you may be able to, you know, on Street View, like, tour around the Magic Kingdom or Epcot.
That's cool.
Yep, this was noticed. Pictures have been posted all over social media of the Google Trekker sighted walking through the parks with the big backpack with the camera on it. You know, have you ever seen, like, the Google, like, car go by?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so the Google Trekker is the same thing, but for places cars can't go, it's just a dude with a backpack with the big 360 camera. That'll be exciting. Will you do that on Google Earth? Will you, like, look up
of
Google
Of course I will.
Yeah, of course you will. So also, it's February, folks, which can only mean one thing, and that is that ticket price, the annual ticket price increase has occurred at Walt Disney World as of yesterday, the 28th. Happy Leap Day, by the way.
Yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah, right.
It's our first ever leap year show.
Yeah, seriously. But the big difference this year is they have instituted, we all knew it was coming, they've instituted a tiered system for one-day passes. Did you see this?
I did.
So now, basically, there are three times of the year. There's value, regular, and peak. And for the one-day ticket option, you're going to have, it's going to be very different as far as, pricing goes. And it's a difference of, like, from value to peak, I believe, is a difference of about $35.
Okay.
So, like, you're not, like, for a family of four, you're talking, you know, over, well over $100 there at that point.
You know, you do see it, though. especially the sporting world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of times, in baseball, they sell the bigger matchups at more money than...
Right, absolutely. And Universal instituted this last year, and so we all knew it was a matter... It's been rumored at Disney forever. And also, no changes to the annual pass pricing, because that changed a couple months ago. But the multi-day tickets have also increased a bit as well. Now, these ticket increases, mind you, being done at a time where a lot of... like attractions and character experiences and food items are being pulled from the parks. Have you noticed that? This big, like, massive movement Disney's doing to seemingly cut a lot of excess fat off of the whole enchilada here.
Right.
interesting to me because, you know, according to, like, articles that I've read online, like from, like, business magazines and stuff like that, I think there was a Forbes or something, they said that it's because the Shanghai park is so grossly over budget and taking so long to get done that they're pulling from the American, and also like Hong Kong, Paris, Tokyo not doing stellar business, they're pulling from the American parks to kind of cut costs from the budget. Meanwhile, Walt Disney World and Disneyland in 2015 have had their best years ever. So my thing is, why pull from what's working? You know?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, maybe it's just, like, me, like, not understanding the world of business because I'm not a Fortune 500 CEO.
I guess they're just trying to kind of cut corners where they can. Trust me, I'm sure they've cut all the corners they can in the, lesser grossing parks.
And I do believe that come the peak time, come, like, Memorial Day weekend, we will start to see a lot of these things come back.
Sure.
And honestly, I would say it probably even makes sense to cut back on some of the excess stuff, during the value season.
I don't see why not. Even cutting things back, for us who go, as much as we can, there's still so many options.
We got a bunch of Disney Springs news this week.
Oh, good.
So Disney Quest is having their operating hours cut. Now, the closure of Disney Quest is coming like a freight train, but with all the cutbacks, I've actually heard rumblings that the NBA experience may be on hold, so we may be holding on to Disney Quest for a little bit longer.
Okay.
But that being what it is, so currently Disney Quest operates from 11:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. on weekdays and 11:30 a.m. to 11 p.m. on weekends. The cut will see them go from a midday opening at right around noon or 12:30 and closing at 9 p.m., so you're cutting about 2 hours out of the Disney Quest day.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't been to Disney Quest since I was 12, but I've heard horror stories that, like, there's lots of, like, broken games. It's getting kind of run down because obviously they're not going to refurb it if it's going away.
Right. Of course.
So I think it's kind of just in this, like, limbo where it's deteriorating, but, like, they don't have the NBA experience to put in its place yet. You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's no point. Not that it's outdated. I mean, I'm sure they could redo it. But I think to make it great again, you'd have to really sink money into it, which mm-hmm. they're not going to do at this point.
Right. Now, also in Disney Springs, the Disney Springs Water Tower has arrived and is now up in the park.
Okay.
Not the park, the locale. So now Disney Springs now has an icon.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's this huge brown water tower that says Disney Springs on it. And it looks pretty tremendous. It's... So now Disney Springs has got one up on Hollywood Studios, and that it has an icon.
Well, Hollywood Studios has an icon.
What? Tower of Terror? No.
No. I mean, I think all of us recognize the Chinese Theater as the icon for now.
You don't put that on stuff. Like, you don't see, like...
They don't, but I would.
I suppose. Also, there's going to be a... Now, you know, one of my main complaints in Disney World a lot of times have been, like, I can't really get a great burger most places. That may be changing now.
Okay.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of the Disney burgers that you can get at the quick... Like, the quick service burgers. Not really... Like, typically, if I'm in the park and I'm getting quick service food, I'll go to Pecos Bill's to get, like, a burrito or something like that. I won't typically go for the burger just because, I don't know, there's just something... Like, they... Are you with me on this, or do you like the Disney burger?
You know what's funny is I ate, I mean, 10 years ago when I went to the parks, I probably ate nothing but burgers. Mm-hmm. And this past trip, I don't think I had a burger. I'm not a big burger person in the parks.
Well, Deluxe Burger is coming to Disney Springs. It's going to be a gourmet burger establishment in which they will create hamburgers with a signature blend of beef featuring unique toppings and fresh baked buns. They will also have chicken and veggie burgers. And for dessert, you can get gelato milkshakes. Which will also be available in alcoholic form, which that'll be opening this summer 2016. So I will definitely be frequenting that because, you know, I am on a quest for to find the greatest Disney burger in existence.
It's at Beaches and Cream.
Isn't that just the same burger as everywhere else?
Nope.
Though?
End of the story. Click.
Wait.
You know that, right? The Beaches and Cream burger is not the same burger you get at every other quick serve location.
I didn't know. It's 100 episodes and you've never told me this.
I thought you knew.
No.
Listen, I can't tell you it's better for you because I'm sure it's not. Whatever they do to that Beaches and Cream burger, it's wonderful.
Is it like the size of a normal burger or is it like a restaurant burger?
It's pretty big. Hmm. You should definitely try it.
It just tastes different? Like, or is it like different toppings? Or like what is...
Listen, I don't know. Just when you eat it. It's like, is there something about it?
It's like a religious experience, like choirs of angels sing.
It's a fantastic burger. I mean, now I'm building it up, and you're going to be like, I had it, and I hated it.
Yeah.
It is a pretty great burger.
You're like Marshall Erickson, like leading me through the streets of New York, trying to find the greatest Disney burger.
Right, exactly.
Okay, no resort news this week. Water park news. The Typhoon Lagoon refurbishment has been extended. Originally was going to be reopening on March 13th. Will now be opening a week later on March 20th. So, if you are taking a trip from, you know, the 13th to the 19th and, you know, water parks were your thing and you wanted Typhoon Lagoon and not Blizzard Beach, you're in for a disappointment, folks. Magic Kingdom news, in keeping with the cuts that have been going on, the Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom has seen a change. Now the Main Street location is the only starting location for the game.
Really?
So your little secret about going to the area behind Ye Olde Christmas Shop is not going to work anymore.
You know, it's funny because we went there this time behind the old Christmas shop. And, you know, it's funny because when I was walking up to it, I was thinking like, wow, they have somebody manning this all day long.
Right. And nobody knows it's there.
And no one knows it's there. There's never anyone there. I've never gone there and there's been someone else there. And I went and, you know, there was a very nice gentleman there who helped us and mm-hmm. gave us a map and, you know, blah, 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 and hooked us up. And we were ready to roll. But I was like, well, I mean, how many people do you think really go there?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, in the course of a day, it makes no sense to employ somebody
Very true.
To do that. When you have an actual location for it, that every single person who's in the park passes.
Right. And the firehouse on Main Street, folks, which is obviously on the left side of that first Main Street hub when you walk in, it's even got a banner that says Sorcerers of the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah, you
on it,
can't so. Walk by. I mean, everyone walks by.
Yeah. So that's the only place to start it off now. But chances are you were starting off from there anyway, because that's the only place I've ever started off. The Skipper Canteen same-day reservation system will continue now beyond the test period. The test period ended on the 27th of February, and it will continue. I did eat there again, Peter Mandel.
And?
Somewhat better. I had the arepas, and they were actually quite good.
Okay.
Somewhat better sounds good. Not wonderful, but, you know, better.
Maybe by the time I go there next time, they'll have it up to par.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you and say it's five-star dining, because it's not. But it was acceptable.
Okay.
I'll put it that
acceptable.
Way.
Exactly what I want from a Disney
exactly.
meal.
Exactly. Folks, for same day reservations for Skipper Canteen, you can go to jungleskippercanteen.com or call 407-993-1933. The Diamond Horseshoe is reopening for table service lunch and dinner on the 13th of March. It is going to be a menu featuring barbecue pulled turkey served over cornbread with seasonal vegetables, split roasted ham. Did I say spit roasted ham? Oh, spit roast. Okay. Oh, now I get that.
Confused look off your face, Kevin.
Okay, yeah. Served with country beans and seasonal vegetables and stewed beef served with mashed potatoes and seasonal vegetables.
That all sounds pretty good.
It does, actually. Yeah. Every other time the Diamond Horseshoe opens, it's just giving you the same stuff that it's giving at Liberty Tree.
I've been in that building one time in my entire life.
To meet Woody?
And to meet Woody, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah, Woody doesn't even meet there anymore. Now it's just, you know, seasonal restaurant. Epcot news. Speaking of food, the International Food and Wine Festival 2016 dates have been announced. That's going to be from September the 14th to November the 14th, so a full 2 months, and it's going to be nearly 2 weeks longer this year than it was last year, which, I mean, and you know, I was regaling you with tales of it, you know, this year. It was a madhouse.
Bet you it's not going to be a Food and Wine Duffy.
Probably not. Now, Figment was on all the Food and Wine merch this past year.
I did like that.
In DAC news, Disney's Animal Kingdom, turkey legs are gone from Animal Kingdom. No more turkey legs in Animal Kingdom.
Huh.
All locations that were selling them are now not selling them anymore. When asked about it, Animal Kingdom was quoted as saying, "They're all right. I'm not sure I ever need to sell another." It's a little two-man-in-the-house insider for you.
Eh.
But yeah, no, it's just weird that there's now a Disney park where you can't get a turkey leg.
I guess.
But listen, I mean, if a turkey leg is what you crave, folks, there are places for it. You know?
Right.
It's in literally all three of the parks.
Kingdom, you know, then you'd be like, all right, this is something.
Magic Kingdom is my turkey leg location.
Of course.
And now, like, they have it. They don't have them in Frontierland anymore because, like, I used to always get them from Frontierland because it just kind of felt
weird.
It just kind of felt better to have it there. Like, right. I'm not getting it from Tomorrowland, come on. But they do have a cart now in Liberty Square. And I feel like that's more acceptable. It's like right outside Haunted Mansion.
They have it in Tomorrowland, don't they?
They do have it in Tomorrowland, but I don't find that to be acceptable.
See, it would be cooler, though, if instead of a turkey leg, like, they made up like some kind of like alien and you're eating that kind of leg.
You're eating the leg of some alien life form?
Yeah.
That's, would, like, make it green?
No, it could stay the same because Jesus.
So it'll look like a turkey leg, but we'll call it like a Gromulan leg.
Right.
I think you're onto something here.
I know. What can I say? Yeah. You know, I should be an Imagineer.
Absolutely. All right. First day in the job. My name's Peter Mandel. I'm your new Imagineer. Gromulan legs. Let's make it happen. Oh, and by the way, take a cheeseburger, put it on a funnel cake. There we go. I'll be over here.
Bring pushback. I'm stepping out for the week.
Exactly. Call me if you need me. You know what? I'm tapped, actually. Don't call. We have a ton of Hollywood Studios news.
Oh, good.
So, elephant in the room, or, you know, bantha in the room. Let's get it right out of the way. The Disneyland 60th Anniversary Wonderful World of Disney special aired. I'm sure you watched it at the Mandel Estate.
Multiple times, actually. I thought it was that good.
Yeah, you know what? I watched it alongside the listeners. We were all kind of, like, live posting about it. I enjoyed the majority of it. A lot of it, I'm like, oh, do I really need to hear, like, pop singers I've never heard of, you know, butcher my favorite songs, but, or Idina Menzel make her way kind of through Let It Go.
Right.
She really can't sing that anymore, but, you know, obviously the takeaway were the things about the park itself, like the featurettes that were being done about the park through the years. The Walt stuff was obviously wonderful. But the takeaway was Harrison Ford giving us our first look at Star Wars Land. And you know what's weird, Peter Mandel? A lot of people were, like, angry. They were like, they didn't show anything. I'm like, well, nothing exists yet.
I get that, though. I know exactly what they're saying because you've been hearing about this for a while now, that Harrison Ford is going to host this part where, like, you find out about Star Wars Land. And they showed you, like, you know, four concept pictures.
I mean, that's exactly what I was expecting, to be perfectly honest.
Cause, like, I know, me too.
I'm used to, like, this kind of disappointments. So maybe it didn't affect me the way it affected other people that aren't as jaded.
Right.
But, like, literally, I expected him to come out and be like, Star Wars, Disneyland, Millennium Falcon. Like, and that was going to be the extent of it. And, you know, it pretty much was that. And they showed a couple of pieces of concept art. So the concept art we did see, though, we saw, like, a point of view inside the Millennium Falcon attraction, and it looks like your ride vehicle is the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon.
Right, which I've been trying to figure out how that's going to work for, you know, a week now.
Yeah, me too. But I've got nothing. So we'll have to wait and see. There We also saw the attraction that's supposed to be the battle between the First Order and the Resistance, which many are surmising is going to be a Spider-Man-like ride, you know, likening it to Universal. Which, I mean, I've been saying Disney needs a ride like that forever. So
agreed.
We've seen the inside of a cantina. I don't believe it is the Mos Eisley's cantina, but I'm sure it will be very similar. I think it's going to be like Maz's cantina.
After they blew that thing up, probably not.
Mm. Listen, I'm sure, well, it won't be the Mos Eisley's cantina. It'll be the Mos Eisley's cantina.
You think so?
You don't think they're going to be playing that music in there? Like, you're walking into a Star Wars cantina. There's one expectation. You don't think that band could have gotten hired, like, you know, from Mos Eisley? Like, listen, guys, you know, we've been playing this gig for 40 years. It's time to move on. It's time to, you know, it's time to find a new place to play. And they're playing now in Hollywood Studios.
Well, maybe instead they'll get that band from the special edition of Return of the Jedi.
No, they all died.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. I think I was about to say Max Rebo lived, but he probably didn't. That was just on Robot Chicken, where he was like an old jazz stereotype. Man, we gotta get to the gig, man. Okay, so we also saw a street market, which, I mean, come on, take my money. I'm gonna buy everything there.
Of course,
I'll buy everything there twice, so I have two of them. Just everything, every little thing. And we saw something that looked like a dinner nightclub type experience, like a live performance at a dinner show.
So, yeah, you think so?
That's what everyone's kind of thinking that one last
picture
was. I
thought that
was.
Too, but...
So, I mean, that means... So what are we getting? We're getting a themed restaurant. I don't know if the cantina will be table service. That is quick service location written all over it, I think, a cantina.
Yeah.
So we got the cantina. So for quick service, the dinner show thing looked like a table service restaurant. We've got a marketplace. We've got two attractions plus Star Tours. I mean, this all sounds like a home run.
I mean, did you expect anything less?
Well, I mean, there was New Fantasyland, remember?
Yeah, but
and while we love New Fantasyland, it was still just a dark ride, a mini roller coaster, and a bunch of places to spend
money. Yeah, but the night they announced New Fantasyland, we knew exactly what it was.
No, because originally New Fantasyland was supposed to be something much, much different. Remember, like, before they announced the mine train, it was like, there's going to be Cinderella's Chateau and Brian
Yeah, when
Rose's
that map
cottage.
Leaked.
Yeah.
Remember when that map leaked and we were like, this can't be it because Dumbo's not where Dumbo's supposed to be.
Right. It was clearly old concept art.
But when they announced at D23, it sounded like a ton of places for you to spend money at.
Yeah.
You know?
But we didn't know going into this that that's not what the Star Wars land was.
Right.
At least I didn't. Toy Story Midway Mania is closing for one day. It will be closed to add the third track. They do have to shut the attraction down on March the 15th. So if you have fast passes for that day, make them for another day.
That's sage-like advice.
So back to Star Wars, a new Star Wars stage show is debuting this spring. Did you see this?
I did.
So this main stage that I've often griped about because, you know, they took down the hat and everybody was like, yay, we can see the Chinese theater again. And now they're like, here's a stage. No, you can't. They now have the main stage, the center stage right there. And much like at Cinderella Castle, where you have the show that goes on several times a day, we will now have Star Wars, A Galaxy Far, Far Away, which is going to be a show featuring such characters as, but not limited to, Kylo Ren, Chewbacca, Darth Vader, and Darth Maul. This debuts on April 4th, 2016, and I cannot wait.
It's a great concept picture, too.
Yeah, agreed. Also, to go with that, a new Star Wars fireworks show will be debuting at Hollywood Studios this summer. It's going to be basically the next generation of, not to throw a Star Trek reference out there, but it's the next generation of the Symphony in the Stars fireworks. It's called Star Wars Galactic Spectacular. It will feature fireworks, laser lights. Now, here's the biggie, projections on the Chinese theater.
I heard it's all like Jar Jar themed.
Oh, good. Because, you know, we need more of that.
He's like your kind of like ghost host, if you will.
I wonder if Bill Farmer can do a Jar Jar voice.
I'm sure he can.
Yeah. We won't ask him to do it, though. But yeah, so they said that some of the projections you'll see will be the Twin Sons of Tatooine, a field of battle droids. You will navigate an asteroid field. You will run the Death Star Trench and blow up Starkiller Base.
This is also being done with, there's going to be a tower of fire that comes out the top of.
That's what I'm most excited about.
Yes, that's supposed to look like a lightsaber coming out the top of the Chinese theater. And spotlight beams in the sky, which are going to be creating lightsabers in the sky. Do you remember a couple months ago, I told you I was at Disney Springs, and I saw, like, from the direction of studios, it was, like, late at night, and I saw a blue spotlight and a red spotlight, and they were kind of clashing in the sky? Now I'm realizing what I saw. It was a beta for this.
Right, exactly.
Dude, take all my money. Take every bit of it. You're getting it anyway. But just take it all. Just take it all. I mean, this is the world that I've dreamed of living in since I was a child.
I agree.
I mean, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars everywhere. I love it. Finally, we've got some Universal news. They have released, did you see, they released a concept video and what the ride vehicle is going to look like for Skull Island Reign of Kong.
No.
Yeah, so look, the ride vehicle actually looks a lot, and this confused me, looks a lot like the Safari vehicle.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure if it's like a free driving vehicle or not, but they showed a little video, like you're going to be encountering not just King Kong, but other, like, monsters of Skull Island. So there's going to be dinosaurs and things like that. So it looks like it's going to be, like, one of the most wild rides on an Islands of Adventure that isn't a roller coaster. So I can't wait. I'm going to be there day one.
I'm going to be there probably year five.
You're going to probably be there in 3 years. So
I'll go 5 years.
Okay. But, yeah, so, I mean, that's some interesting news coming out of Universal.
Orlando. It is cool looking. Like, when you did when we did the Pterodon Flyers.
Yeah.
You actually go over Kong.
Oh, okay.
You know, because you're flying above the wall.
When I was there last, I saw, like, they had just started putting in, like, lighting fixtures along what I'm assuming is going to be the queue area.
Yeah.
And, like, I could see the lights, and they were still, like, wrapped in plastic. They were that new. So, super-duper excited about this ride.
Yeah. I mean, I like King Kong, actually, a lot.
I like King Kong, and I liked the old King Kong ride. So
I've always likened, you know, King Kong Godzilla to Beatles Elvis. I get everyone's like into Godzilla. He's right. Like the monster of choice.
But King Kong's King Kong.
King Kong's just, I love King Kong.
Yeah, me too. I mean, but you know what? We're gonna have to make that choice soon because King Kong and Godzilla are gonna fight in the movies.
Yeah, but I bet you it's gonna be like Civil War. Like I think they're gonna fight a little bit.
They'll fight a little bit, like Batman versus Superman, where
they're gonna team up, fight something else.
Moth.
I'm just curious, like, Godzilla is, in scale, so much bigger than King Kong.
Is he really?
Yeah, like, for real bigger.
Maybe not the King Kong we're going to see in this movie. Like, maybe they're making
That's what I'm telling you. They're going to have to amp up King Kong. Think about it, King Kong picks up What's-Her-Face in all the movies, and she's, like, in his hand.
Yeah.
Like, he's maybe, like, I don't know, 5 stories tall, maybe?
They're gonna have to
Godzilla's
make huge.
They're
going to make him a lot bigger because that Godzilla was huge.
It was huge.
The Godzilla that is the jumping off point of this shared universe
right.
is huge. So, all right. So, done with the news?
I don't know. Are you done with the news?
I'm pretty much done unless you had something you want to add.
I have no news this week.
All right. Well, then we are going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to hear from our wonderful sponsors and the rest of the White Dragon Podcast Network. And then we will be right back with our e-ticket attraction of the week. So stay tuned, folks. More Two Men and the Mouse coming at you right after this. You know, Pete, it's hard work planning a Disney vacation.
Of course.
Your whole family has to get going. You got to pack everything up. You got to figure out where you're eating. You got to figure out where you're staying. But you know what makes life so much easier and makes your trip planning a more fun experience?
Tell me. That sounds like something I need.
Absolutely. You need a travel agent.
Do we know one of those?
We absolutely do. We know our good friend and sponsor, Dave Weikert of Magical Travel, the official travel agent of Two Men and the Mouse, folks.
We've both used him.
Yes, we have. Dave Weikert plans our Disney vacations all the time, and we would not recommend him if we didn't use his services ourselves. Dave started his Cranford-based business here in 2008, and in that time has been planning hundreds of Walt Disney World vacations. Dave plans every trip as if it were his own, and you will never find someone more passionate about Disney. Very easy to work with, and will do his best to make sure you're satisfied. Working with Dave, you're likely to pay less and get more. And what's better than that, Peter Mandel?
Tell me.
You never pay a charge for Dave's services. It is 100% free. Dave will plan your entire trip for no additional cost to you.
That sounds awesome.
Absolutely. Dave has helped over 875 families enjoy their Disney vacations. A graduate of the College of Disney Knowledge, Dave has visited every Disney World resort and has personally stayed at 12 Disney World resorts. He's dined also at every Disney restaurant. He's crazy about Disney food.
That is an accomplishment.
Absolutely. I wish I could say I did
that.
That's
like the snack challenge times 10.
Yep. Dave also gives you Disney dollars for land packages and shipboard credits for any Disney Cruise Line vacations you might be going. This can be used as cash at any Disney destination or store. Traveling with kids in your party, Dave will also provide you autograph books for all your kids.
He gave them to us?
Absolutely. Your kids went down with Dave Weicker autograph books.
Of course.
Well, Disney autograph books supplied by Dave Weicker.
Depends how his name on it.
Dave simplifies your life by booking your complete vacation, including resort stay, airlines, Disney meal plans, and park passes. Also, checks daily for new discounts. When specials are announced, he immediately checks availability and rebooks your vacation at the lowest possible price. Dave can also book all your Disney dining and will do his best to get hard-to-book reservations like Cinderella's Royal Table and Be Our Guest. It's really, truly a no-brainer. Folks, take the stress out of your life. Dave Weichert of Magical Travel, the official travel agent of Two Men and the Mouse. Do you want to embrace the inner gourmet in your life? Do you tire of a life of hot dogs, ramen noodles, and Pop-Tarts? Do you long to wow your loved ones with homemade delicious meals and chuck that kid cuisine in the trash? Well, good thing we've got thecookandwookie.com. The Cookin' Wookie is a food and recipe blog designed to walk you through recipes that will dazzle your dinner table. Tim Elbing is our Wookie host, and he will take you on a culinary journey that will make you and all of your dinner guests thankful at your next Life Day feast. So let the Wookie win your loyalty, folks, and head over to thecookinwookie.com. That's thecookinwookie.com. Fire up your oven, and may the forks be with you.
Hi there, this is Monica Pinto from the Mouse in Our House podcast, inviting you to join me here every other Friday for all things Disney from my perspective. Let's face it, with our fast-paced lives in a crazy world, always running from one place to another, from hectic work days to family responsibilities, from household chores to those never-ending errands, it sometimes seems impossible to survive until your next Disney trip. How to turn that around? Easy, by keeping a little bit of that Disney magic in our everyday lives. So go ahead, sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee and a little something sweet, and let's chat Disney. Join me here on the White Dragon Podcast Network every other Friday, where we'll celebrate all the magic, all the fun, all the memories, and even some stuff that's not so magical. But don't worry, a little bit of pixie dust should take care of that. So until then, I hope you remember to keep the mouse in your house.
Do you like the Disney parks? I do too. So does my little sister. That's why we started a podcast about them. Hi, I'm Dimitri Rivanis. The name of our show is The Extra Magic Hour. You can hear new episodes each and every Thursday here on the White Dragon Podcast Network. You can also find the show on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your podcasts. Now, in addition to telling you what we love about the parks and doling out some news and tips, we'll do something a little different. We'll tell you what we hate about the parks, where the mouse can improve, and we'll do some fighting. Well, not fighting. We call it friendly debate. Things that Disney fans have been debating and arguing about forever and ever. You'll hear them played out in real time between a brother and a sister every Thursday right here on the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Today's e-ticket attraction is brought to you by Kingdom Strollers, a Disney preferred stroller and crib rental service in Orlando, Florida. KingdomStrollers.com. Save money and stroll in style.
Do you need a break from modern living? Do you long to shed your weary load? If your nerves are raw and your brain is fried, just grab a friend and take a ride together on the open road. Come on, Maxie! All in all, I'd rather have detention.
Folks, Disney is a world of voices, and voices, I think more than anything else, really sometimes define our childhood. Auditory recognition is one of the main things that a child learns first in their life, and I would say the voice of many of our childhood childhoods are the voice of, you know, Disney characters, cartoons that we've watched growing up. Pete, you'd agree with that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's why it's kind of a surreal moment for us here on the 100th episode of Two Men and the Mouse to be able to welcome into the studio here, well, into our virtual studio, a true legend, and not just a legend by saying it, a man who was actually honored as a Disney legend. Folks, you've heard him your whole lives. You'll continue to hear him for years to come. He is the soundtrack to my childhood. He is Bill Farmer, the voice of Goofy. Bill, welcome to Two Men and the Mouse.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. It's great to see both of you, too. So that's kind of a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, I mean, we're both, like, super-duper thrilled that you agreed to come on. It's such a great way to celebrate the 100th episode, you know, having a true Disney legend here. So, I mean, it's been a while, you know, now that you've been playing Goofy. I believe 1987 you took on the role, right?
Yeah, this year, next January, it'll be 30 years.
Wow.
So just turned 29 years about a month ago.
That's great.
That's a long time. It's getting a lot easier to do them old voices.
Pete, I'm assuming Goofy was you know, a big, huge part of your childhood as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he was my favorite Disney character growing up. And, of course, never getting thinking in the wildest dreams that I'd ever get a chance to voice him. Which, to get to not only to do a Disney character, an iconic Disney character, but your favorite is of great thrill and honor that I've had for these last 30 years.
That's fantastic. So, you know, growing up, you know, you're listening to Pinto Colvig do it.
Yes. Yeah.
So
from the 1930s, and especially I loved all the old cartoons, especially, you know, the 1930s with Boat Builders and Lonesome Ghosts and, you know, all the how to
ride a horse,
you know, and all of those things. He was always my fave.
That's great. That's fantastic. So, I mean, at what age did you first realize that, okay, you know, doing voices is something not everybody's got in them. And I think we all kind of experiment from it at a young age. When is the first time that you, you know, realize that, like, this is something that I'm good at or something that I have a passion for?
Well, when I was a kid, I, you know, was a big TV and cartoon fan, although I really didn't try to do impressions that much until I was probably about 12 years old. And I think one of the first ones was Don Adams on Get Smart, you know, Agent 86 of Control. And I was just playing around with a voice, and I a friend of mine said, hey, that kind of sounds like him. So I, oh, that's cool. And I started playing around with other actors at the time and, you know, some of the old cowboy actors and
the old Walter Brennan Shorty thing.
Well, and John Wayne as well, and, well, Jimmy Stewart.
And practicing those, and it just kind of came to me, and I just kind of picked it up.
That's it. Pete, he puts my voices to shame.
I know. I feel bad. I didn't want to say that, Kevin, but he clearly trumps you.
I know. No, it's, you know, it's understandable. being this is a Disney Parks podcast, you know, we love the theme parks above all else here. Did you grow up in California? Like, so were you near Disneyland?
Not at all. I grew up in South Central Kansas. So I had never been to Disneyland until I was an adult and out of college. And I took a trip for my first time to California in 75, something like that. And we went to Disneyland. But the second time, I was actually the voice of Goofy because I hadn't been out here since until I moved back out in 1986 and got the audition and was the voice. So I'd only been once before I actually got the job.
Wow. So, I mean, when was the first time you went to Walt Disney World? I assume then that would also be... You know.
That would have been probably about 1987, probably 88, when they'd send me down there to do some recordings or a live interview or something like that. But I'd never been there growing up.
Like, you would actually be recording for the attractions if you had to record a Disney World attraction, they send you to Disney World to do that?
Not generally for the attractions, but what they would do when they would open a new park or something like Animal Kingdom or a new ride, quite often they would send us, the voice actors, down to do radio interviews. And there may be as many as 200-300 radio interviews we would do in a week. And we would just go, they'd have tables set up like, you know,
KGLS, K whatever next to it, and so and so. It could be from all over Indianapolis. Then you might do one from, you know, Paris, who knows, and Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle. All these stations would have radio remote live broadcasts from the park covering the opening of whatever it was, the Tower of Terror or whatever. And we would come on as, you know, Mickey, Donald, Goofy, and live, and we would just kind of, you know, play like we're there with the DJs and just wing it.
Right.
And it was great training because you got to, it was like improv, and we got a trip to Walt Disney World and got to see all the cool stuff.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And didn't have to pay.
Can't beat that.
Yeah, that is the trick, right? Getting around that with the
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you got the audition to go in to read for the voice of Goofy. What was it nerve-wracking for you? Like, you know, walking in, Pinto Colvig, you know, is like this towering legend at this point. What did it feel like to try to walk in and be like, okay, well, now it's time for me to try to, you know, step into that role?
Well, it wasn't. I certainly was thrilled when I got a chance to audition, but I didn't know how big, because they never say this is for the official voice of the character. They just said they wanted to, you know, audition people for Goofy. So they gave me a cassette of Pinto Colvig and some of the lines from his cartoons. I got that over a weekend. I went to my agent and just laid them down, copying what I heard on the cassette tape. And as that was my very first animated character audition after moving to California, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if it was going to be one time, two times. I didn't know the potential, really. I knew it had a potential to be big, but they didn't, you know, they didn't really let me know this is like the real biggie. And even when I got it, I didn't know if it was once or twice or whatever. And they never really said, you know, gave me, I don't have a plaque saying, you are the official voice of Goofy. They just have been calling me back for these 20, 30 years.
So now, had you ever experimented with the voice of Goofy prior to the audition?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I was a kid, you know, I practiced with all of them. But it wasn't in my repertoire. And for about 5 or 6 years before coming out here, I was a stand-up comic impressionist. And I did a lot of impressions. Goofy was not in my repertoire. But I practiced it. And I would play around with different voices. Like,
yeah, Kermit the Frog. I would practice the voice in the, and like, you know, Bullwinkle. Hey, Rocky, let me pull a rabbit out of my hat. You know, and all of those characters. And, oh, brother, ain't I a stinker?
And I just play with them. But I never, again, thought that it would ever come to anything. It was just kind of a fun thing to do.
Petus, Kermit puts mine to shame.
I know. That's pretty great.
And his Bullwinkle puts Dave Coulier's to shame.
I know. He does.
A few years ago, I think I had one of my highest honors down at Comic-Con. They were honoring June Foray, who was the original voice of Rocky in the Rocky and Bullwinkles. Mm-hmm. And they needed a Bullwinkle, and they asked me to do it. So I got to do Bullwinkle live in front of about 2,500 people at Comic-Con, where she was doing, hey, Rocky, you know, and I doing the whole sketch and everything with her, which was a real highlight.
Was Bullwinkle like was a biggie for you growing up?
Absolutely. All the Jay Wards, all the Hanna-Barbera characters, of course, and, of course, the Warner Brothers characters I saw most often on TV that time. Usually the Disney characters were, I'd see them on Sunday with The Wonderful World of Color and on the Disney shows. But I saw almost every afternoon, it seemed like they'd have the Warner Brothers cartoons on. And, of course, became a big fan of Mel Blanc and all of those. And finally got to meet him later on. So,
I mean, and that's got to say something also about your career, that you were able to kind of like dip into both of the major pools. Like, you know, you've been Goofy for 30 years, but little known fact is that you were also in one of my all time favorite movies. I know one of Pete's favorites too, which is Space Jam.
Oh yeah.
So you got to dive into that Warner Brothers pool.
I did. I was very fortunate in that. And I was originally hired to do Sylvester for that movie. And Ivan Reitman was the animation director on that and the producer of the movie.
That's a legendary
and as
name.
As it turned out, I got to audition also for Yosemite Sam and Foghorn. And later on in some episodes of Robot Chicken, I've done Bugs and Daffy. And so I'm kind of covering the Warner Brothers catalog a little piece at a time.
You know what's funny? Because like I had never known, you know, before I started doing my homework for the interview that you were in Space Jam, and a lot of the lines that you do in Space Jam are some of my favorite lines in Space Jam. Like, you know, like my biscuits are burning, or
yeah. Biscuits are burning. Yeah,
did you order original, you know, recipe or extra crispy? Like, it's one of my favorites.
Right, right. Well, you know, and of course, I believe that was the last time. Well, that was earlier. I think the biscuits were burning. Was actually Joe Alasky from Roger Rabbit, is what he said.
Oh,
that was earlier. But and that was the last time Mel Blanc, I think, performed. He couldn't do Yosemite in that one. Mm-hmm. They had Joe do that. But he did Bugs and Daffy, and right at that time, I got to meet him, which was one of the highlights. Also, to get to meet. You know, Mel Blanc, one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
That was cool.
So what's it like when you get that phone call, I guess, from your agent or whoever calls you? Is like, Bill, guess what? You got it. You're Goofy.
Well, I've never gotten that phone call that said, you are the official voice.
Well,
it
right,
was but... over a period. When I got that first one, I was ecstatic, and I was kind of a little terrified, and I was so green. I didn't know what the heck I was doing when I came out here, because I had been a stand-up at the time. I got to the studio when we recorded, which was a show called Disney's Doggone Valentine, and I just had to do a looping line, loop to some old Goofy footage from an old cartoon, and... I'd never done that before. And when I went into the studio, I was meeting people, and I met Tony Anselmo, who does the voice of Donald. He was sitting there, and he's an animator. So he was sitting there just sketching Donald and just doing it beautifully. And I really thought to myself, we don't have to draw these guys, do we? I thought there was a horrible mistake and they were looking for animators. But no, they wanted me to talk like Goofy, and I got through it. And that was so exciting and kind of, you know, scared in the headlights. The second time I worked, which was about a month later, it was on another, it was DTV. They had it was kind of like MTV. They kind of mash up of songs and old cartoons. And I got to do the opening it was that old Peacock opening from NBC. And I got to do it who am I thinking of from Laugh-In, actually, Gary Owens. Right. Who was, you know, the great announcer, had that wonderful Gary Owens voice. And he was so nice because we got to share a microphone, and I was totally scared. And I got, he would come in and say, the following program is brought to you in living color. And I would say, and stereo on NBC. And I was just on cloud nine, and he was so nice. And, well, hello, Bill, it's nice to see you. Welcome. You know, and he was so nice and made me
that
feel
wasn't
that
like a That wasn't like an announcer voice he put on. That was just his regular voice.
It was kind of his. He kind of amped it up a little bit when he was on, but his regular voice had that very articulate sound.
That's awesome.
So really what you're saying is that phone call could still be coming.
It might be, yeah. Yeah.
Hey, Bill, just to let you know, we want you after all this time.
I knew it was permanent in 2009 when they made me a Disney legend. I thought, well, maybe now, yeah, it's definitely official.
Now it's a safe bet.
It's been a 30-year audition. You finally it almost has passed been. The finish line.
I think I passed the audition.
So now, over the years, obviously, you've had to lend your voice to not just animated films or features or cartoons, but to a lot of the classic Disney attractions that people enjoy on a daily basis.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Any of them really stick out in your mind as like when you went to go see them, and it's like, I remember working on this, and I love this ride.
Oh, well, of course, Goofy's Barnstormer, my voices at the mailbox at Disneyland and Toontown. The movie barn was one of my favorites because we got to just, if you go into Mickey's house at Toontown at Disneyland, they had the Mickey's movie barn, and there's kind of silhouette of Donald and Goofy running the projector and kind of showing these different cartoons and stuff. And we got to kind of ad-lib that, which was a lot of fun. They kind of had a kind of a script, but we got to play a lot and come up with stuff. That was a lot of fun, too. And, when you do a movie that you see in the theaters and stuff, you forget what you do sometimes until you see it on television or in the movies. And then you go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, why'd they use that take? I thought I did it better. Or, oh, that came out better than I thought. Mm-hmm. You never know until you see it.
When you guys will like sit down to do something with the Toontown thing, are you guys sitting in the same room together, like radio play style, or are you doing it separately and they splice it in later?
Totally depends. Most of the time we do it solo. And I will do my lines, and Tony would do his lines, or Wayne would do his lines, and I would come in. In the early days, we did it more ensemble, like a radio play. Mm-hmm. Back when we were recording on tape, to like a 24-track recorder, it was easier to record us all at the same time. Now, with editing software, it's so easy to me do my lines five times. They pick the best one. They have Mickey do his lines five times and pick the best one of that and put them together, and you can't tell we aren't even in the same room.
Is that challenging as a performer to not be able to hear like what you're reacting to, or do you guys know each other and each other's performances so well by this point that it's just kind of like you know what's coming?
Yeah, if you're doing a new series or something new where you don't know the characters, it gets a little – you rely on the director a lot. And he'll tell you what the scene is, because you got to know how far away the other character is. If Mickey's right next to me, I might go, you know, gorge howdy, Mickey. If he's 50 feet away, gorge howdy, Mickey. You know, you just got to do it in your mind. It's kind of like, you know, on camera now, if you're doing a superhero kind of thing, it's all green screen and, you know, all the actors are just the mark on the wall. That's the monster. And you have to pretend that's going to get me.
You know, I think my favorite attraction that has your voice in it is probably Mickey's PhilharMagic in the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
I love it because you just hear him. You don't see him. You never see him throughout the attraction. You just hear your voice. You know, like walking around and doing stuff or getting electrocuted or, you know, things like that.
I like that, too. It is a theater of the mind, and you can just see him in your mind's eye running around and what's that? Whoa, you know, and getting electrocuted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't even have to visually see it. I love it because we all know the characters so well at this point. I mean, I know as a kid, my favorite cartoon growing up was Goof Troop.
Oh, really? Yeah, that was my first series. Now, that actually, I got a big sense of, okay, this is a big deal, because a series is kind of a big deal, and it goes on. It's not just, oh, thank you, we'll call you when we have something else. You don't know if that's when that's going to be. But a series, okay, we got 80 of these things to do, or 60, or whatever, however many you get to do. And it takes a period of 2 or 3 years to do it. So at least you're going to eat for a couple of years.
Yeah, and you know, when it came to that, something like Goof Troop, I feel like it must have been so wonderful for you to have more time to emote as the character, because it wasn't so much just like he's getting electrocuted or he's falling off something big. You got to show the tenderness between a father and a son on a daily basis.
And even more so when we went into a Goofy movie. Still, a Goof Troop was kind of a Saturday morning thing. It was high energy, quick-paced. We got to kind of slow it down and add more layers when we did a Goofy movie because Max was older and, you know, he had a girlfriend. And so there were a lot more layers and things that we had to do with the character during the movie as opposed to the series.
Was that your first starring role in a feature film?
In a way, the first one actually was a short called Prince and the Pauper, which came out around 1990. It was in front of Rescuers Down Under. And that was the first time I ever saw my character on screen with an audience, like in a real theater, with hearing the audience react and hearing them laugh at stuff I did and seeing it on a big screen. That's kind of intimidating, really, in you. Gosh, that looks great. And I got to do like 5 voices in that particular cartoon. So I got to invent one for Horace Horsecollar. I got to be a chicken. I was a weasel guard. And, of course, Pluto. By that time, I'd been doing Pluto just about as long as Goofy and got to do a lot of barking in that, which is actually more difficult than doing Goofy. Trying to get it's like acting with one arm tied behind your back. OK, Goofy, you know, Pluto is scared and you got to do different whimpers and it's a little tougher on you vocally.
Right. Yeah, Prince and the Pauper was one of my all time favorites as a kid. Like I remember I actually wore that VHS tape out.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I was really proud of that. That was a lot of fun and really, just really looked great in the theaters.
You know what? Goofy movie to this day remains one of my all-time favorite Disney movies.
I can't believe it was 20 years ago.
Oh, God. Was it really 20 crazy. Years ago?
I know. That's the best thing about doing voices is the fact that your voice really doesn't change that much. I don't look the same as I did in 1995.
Right.
But I sound the same.
And you know, Goofy movie has had such staying power. It's so beloved.
Like, yeah.
I can't imagine, like, you don't usually see Mickey get his own movie. You don't see Donald get his own movie. But that story between Goofy and Max, it's such a timeless tale that I feel like it just stayed with people. Like, I still have people like, yeah, Powerline. Like, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It really has. And it was the first and to this date the only full-length feature film in theaters starring one of the main Disney characters. Mickey hasn't had a full-length feature film, or neither Donald or anyone. Mm. Goofy has. And that's
two of them now,
just,
right? Because there was an extremely goofy movie also.
Extremely goofy movie. It did not come out to theaters. It was directed a video.
I couldn't remember if that was or not.
But, yeah, two movies and actually three. We were going to put Three Musketeers was supposed to go into theaters, but it didn't. But up to now, still, it's a goofy movie. And at D23 this last year, it was the 20th anniversary. So Don Hahn, who's the producer of Maleficent and Beauty and the Beast and Lion King and all of these, put together a great panel. And, God, it was like being one of the Beatles, the people, the fans were incredible. We had like 1,200 fans who came out, and we got Tevin Campbell, who I hadn't seen since the movie, to sing Eye to Eye live on stage in front of the group. Jason Marsden, who played Max, did not sing in the movie. They got another. They didn't know he could sing, really, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so they had me sing with a guy named Aaron Lohr, fine singer. But we rectified that problem because, you know, Jason always felt that, well, you know, I could have sung. I wish they'd let me have it. So we got to sing it live, the open road, live to the crowd with Jason and me, which was a big thrill for me, him, and the audience. It was like we got a 3-minute standing ovation. And as I understand it, we got a 100%, you know, like satisfaction thing from the people that saw the panel. In fact, we beat out the Star Wars panel, which had Harrison Ford and George Lucas, and we beat them out on satisfaction. People, they're diehard fans. I'm very pleased of them. You know, amazing.
I will admit here before the masses that every time I watch the Goofy movie, I cry, and I cry at the same part every time.
The waterfall?
I've got my own life part? Now. I know. I just want to be a part of it. Every single time it gets me. Because the way you emote that line, it's just you hear that, like you just hear the sadness and like the desperation to connect with your son. And like it hits me. Like as a kid who loves his father, and you know, now as an adult, it hits me on so many levels.
Oh, I remember we saw an early screening of that on the Disney lot in which was Walt's old screening room. And I was really terrified there because I'm sitting next to, like, two seats away was Michael Eisner and Roy Disney watching it. And it's still kind of in pencil test. It's not totally done. And I'm going, I hope they like it. I hope they like it. And my son was with me, who was 5 at the time. And as he came out, he was crying. And I said, what's the matter, buddy? Didn't you like it? And he said, well, when Goofy went over the waterfall, I thought that was you, you know. Aww. And oh, man. So it got to him on that that emotional level. And so it was a bonding picture for me and my son, as well as Goofy and Max.
Hey, Pete, have you watched that movie with Ethan?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Today I still get fan mail all the time of, you know, that changed my relationship with my dad. And we play High Hopes on the radio on a tape when we go, just to kind of honor the movie. And it was a pleasure to do. And I'm amazed and happy that it still has the staying power it does.
It is great how Goofy kind of evolves. I mean, he's the only one of the Fab Five that actually has like an evolution.
Mm-hmm. He really does. And on some of the newer projects, the Mickey Mouse shorts we have, they've kind of taken him in a whole different way too. So it's fun, the challenge of keeping him the goof, but changing him around a little bit, giving him different kind of, you know, personalities within the spectrum of being goofy.
You know what? That's a wonderful transition, because my next question is, pretty much like one of the biggest fandoms that I personally have, and I know it's a huge thing out there, that's Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing the popularity of that series.
I mean, so what was it like to take the character now on an entirely new journey? I mean, he's still goofy. He's still the lovable goof, but it's a deeper, like, rich, multi-layered story at this point.
Right. But to the actors, it's very difficult sometimes because, first of all, Kingdom Hearts was produced originally in Japan And so it was voiced in Japan before it was voiced here. The Japanese contingent came over to my recording sessions to kind of look in, and I would hear in my headphone the Japanese actor who was doing Goofy, who had studied me on how to do, like, the laugh and everything. And it's very odd in another language. It was kind of like, oh, doishi maika chow, oh, you know, it's odd to my hearing. And I have to do it to picture to get my lip flaps the same as the Japanese actor and put the English in. And they are not linear. It's like I'll do a page, okay, go to page 16, go to page 87, go to page 63. You don't really get a sense of the linear story because there's so many little different things depending on what the player does that you've got to do. And it gets very confusing. So you just have to kind of keep it. It's more technical. You just have to kind of do that one line. Don't worry about the lines before or after it and get it in there and get it to look like the character on the screen is actually doing it. And then they will adjust it if they need to later on. And also it's very odd. Even when I was doing Pluto, I would actually got a direction from one of the Japanese directors who was there, and he had his own idea of this. And it was like, woof, woof, woof. And I'd go, row, row, row. Oh, that was very good.
Oh, that's fantastic. But
they were great and very fun to work with.
You know, when it comes to, like, because I was a fan of both Disney and Square Onyx, or Square Soft at the time of the first game. So I remember in Kingdom Hearts 2, there's a line where you say something like, ain't Sephiroth supposed to be the dark part of Cloud's heart? And I was just like, oh, it's like still a surreal moment to me that these two things that could not be further apart on the spectrum are together.
Right.
Goofy is talking about Sephiroth, which is like never in a million years.
The crossover is also the different worlds. When he was in, like, Ariel's underwater kingdom, he's a turtle.
Yes.
And it's kind of fun to cross over and put these characters in different worlds and see how they would react.
That's also true because you got to kind of play around in a number of different, Disney, universes, like, Nightmare Before Christmas or Aladdin.
Right.
Must have been really interesting to I feel like, how do you feel about the way Goofy's portrayed in Kingdom Hearts? Because I feel the fact that he fights with a shield is perfect for him.
It is. He's not really an aggressive type of character. And I think they had problems on how aggressive should he be in here.
He mostly just pushes with the shield when you're...
Yeah, he wants to get things done, but he's not really attacking you and shooting you all up with a gun.
Right. Donald throwing lightning bolts makes sense. But for Goofy, just pushing him back with the shield, I thought it was absolutely fantastic. So when it comes to Goofy in Kingdom Hearts, though, there's that one scene in Kingdom Hearts 2, which I'm sure people talk to you about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The scene in which the rock falls from the mountain and hits him in the head. And they play it off like Goofy just died.
Right.
What was
right.
It? So you open up the script and you're looking at this, and what was it like to be like, oh, this is where we're going? Like,
yeah, I remember. I think I actually asked us, are we gonna have another recording session on this? Is this kind of it or what? What are you doing here? But I figured, nah, they'd never kill him off.
No.
So I was pretty confident that they wouldn't. And I think I looked later on, I had more lines later on, so I knew I was going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah. But, it's a powerful moment that I don't think you normally get to see. And you see the bond between Mickey, Goofy, and Donald in that moment, like when Mickey's fist just slowly clenches and starts shaking. Like, you never see things like that normally, and it was just such a departure.
You know, that's probably why these characters have been so popular for so long. Unlike any other cartoon characters, they come back. Gosh, Goofy's, 80-some years old now. It works. It's the love that they have for each other, but they're kind of like parts of a whole. Donald's got the temper. Goofy has the optimism. Mickey has the moral code and let's do what's right gang. They kind of complete each other, and that hasn't even changed in 80 years. As long as the personalities are there, they'll be lovable forever.
Now, what would you say, because, Kingdom Hearts fans have been so patient, waiting for Kingdom Hearts 3. What would you say to the fans that are just clamoring for Kingdom Hearts 3? Because I assume, have you recorded that yet?
Oh, yeah. I've recorded, several years on it, off and on. I don't know why it's taken so long. I would have assumed it would have been out by now.
Yeah.
But of course, they never talked to me about that. I'm the hired help. So
this will be 10. I believe it came out in 2006, Kingdom Hearts 2. So this will be 10 years between 2 and 3. And, you know, there have been other games in there, but Goofy hasn't really been a main focal point of those games.
Right, right. And I've certainly recorded, you know, on those games. But the last session I did on Kingdom Hearts 3 was, you know, well over a year ago. So they're taking their time, but it should be. Maybe it's that massive, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, it'll probably be worth the wait.
It definitely seems like it's going to be a pretty, you know, a pretty massive experience. So now you also, you know, regularly still do stand-up, right?
Not a whole lot of stand-up. I do a lot of more. I'm getting into visiting comic cons and events around the country, private speaking events, but not in the traditional sense. Not in the comedy clubs anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just I'm too busy, and usually to really do stand-up, you need to not just do one night here and there, but you need to do it each night and really keep going. I just don't have the time for that. Well, but it's a lot of fun when I do.
What was your stand-up routine like back in the day?
Oh, gosh. I would do a lot of television characters. I'd do, like, you know, Johnny Carson, Karnak bits. And the answer is Donald Duck. Mm-hmm. And the question, what do you say to a Disney character during a drive-by shooting? Donald Duck, you know.
My Ed McMahon laugh.
Thank you, Ed. A lot of stuff from the TV series at the time, like All in the Family.
I want She Wears Glory in Mine. I did think, but I don't know.
And, you just transported me to a time when that show was allowed to be on TV.
There was always a lot of fun voices that I would play with specifically, like, from Taxi, Christopher Lloyd was my favorite.
So I would work on Reverend Jim,
you know, or...
Did you do Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future?
Marty, let's go. We're going back in the future. The flux capacitor is working,
you know.
Fantastic.
And, a lot of those things. One of my favorites, and was his last movie was a Goofy movie, was Pat Buttram, who played kind of, you know, he was Mr. Haney on Green Acres.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 83. He was in Lester's Possum Park. He just kind of was the promoter there, kind of hit, and kind of comes out and just says, here it is. And that's about all. Yeah. But what a great old guy. I got to meet him during that time. And
thrilling.
Fun guy.
How often do you get to the Disney parks nowadays?
I was down there for a meeting on Sunday, so a few times a year, not a great number of times. Almost always when people come to visit, like, you know,
hey, can you get me into Disneyland? You know, we'll come live with you for a week.
A lot of times it is when people are visiting and want to take their kids to Disneyland, I can get them in and we go down there. But for work, I rarely, if ever, work down there unless it's a big event, which I haven't done in a few years. But I get down there a few times a year, definitely. Just sometimes just to go on one or two rides just for the heck of it and check out new things.
If you're going into, let's say you're going into like a Walt Disney World, Magic Kingdom or something like that, and you only have one or two rides that you're able to go on, what are the two rides that you're picking?
In Florida or here?
Florida.
In Florida, my goodness, I always visit Animal Kingdom. I think it's wonderfully done. Mm-hmm. The safari, I love the live animals. I love zoos and stuff like that. Their Tower of Terror, I was at the premiere to that and met Mrs. Rod Serling there. And I love that. That's even better than the one in California because, it's longer. The queue line on that is great. In California, my favorite rides are Indiana Jones, Space Mountain. Mm. Of course, you know, I can't go to any of the parks without at least going to either Pirates or the Haunted Mansion.
Yes.
Those are my old favorites, and the new ones are, you know, and the Rock and Roller Coaster. I just love it at the Hollywood Studios down in Florida. At the fast ones, I like that.
And let those cast members try to tell you that you don't have a fast pass for it. You're Goofy.
That's right.
I do not have a fast pass when I go there. Sometimes if I'm working, I'll have a guide that can get me on. But no, when I can get in for free, but no fast pass.
Ah, so you're waiting in line with the
now, I am.
As a voice actor, I guess there is a certain amount of anonymity and privacy that you're able to have.
Yeah. Because
most folks don't know what you look like. But like when you go through a park, are there super fans that will look at you and be like, hey, you're Bill Farmer, you're Goofy?
Yeah, more and more with the advent of, more stuff on YouTube and interviews that I've done, people now recognize me much more than they did in the old days. And I used to take advantage of that. If I was sitting in line at Pirates or something and some dad's in front of me and he's got his kid on his shoulder, sometimes I would just kind of turn my head a little bit and, gosh. And then the kid would like look around and I'd never let on and Daddy, it was Goofy. Shut up, go to sleep.
Drive by goofying.
I like that. Drive by goof. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Now, do you have a favorite food that you like to eat when you're in the parks? Like a certain snack that's.
Oh, gosh. If I can stay away from the churros, I love churros. I love the chicken dinner up on, Main Street at the Carnation Plaza. When I'm near and my wife's favorite are the asparagus, the bacon asparagus at the little, the hut right across from Indiana Jones. That's a good snack, and it's usually pretty quick, and it takes so long to sit down and have a full dinner, I rarely get a chance to do that. But and Blue Bayou is a great restaurant. It's one of my all-time favorites.
Peaches State there. Yeah, we just had my son's birthday there.
Oh, really? I love that. Great. I love the ambience out there because you get to see the boats going through Pirates, and that's one of my faves.
I barely remember what I ate. You spend the entire time looking over on the water.
It's you just do. So yeah, it's like you're in the deep south somewhere, in New Orleans or something.
So, Bill, some of our listeners also sent in some questions for you.
Sure.
So Scott Varney wanted to ask, did Disney have to give you any kind of special training when you took over as Goofy? Like, were they very particular about how the voice was done?
They would in the sessions. They just wanted me to get as, in the beginning it was kind of an impression of Pinto Colvig. Mm-hmm. And the important part is the emotion. The emotional life of the character is almost more important than the voice. Because without the emotion and without the personality of Goofy, it's just a voice and it doesn't ring true. And you don't feel that heart that you do if it's acted properly. So you have to feel kind of like Goofy, and you have to get inside his skin and know how he would react in any different situation. But there really wasn't. There was certainly the directors would coach me in a different direction, and say on a Goofy movie, it was a little different than Goof Troop or different than the Mickey Shorts or whatever. Everyone kind of got their own idea. My job is to keep him real to the personality of Goofy.
Right. Julie Highland asks, she says, as the mother of four quirky kids, were you quirky as a child?
I was strange. Yeah. My parents didn't know what the heck to do with me. I'd run around. I'd do all those voices and stuff. And I'd come to dinner and I'd watch TV and I'd come as, George Burns or something. Hey, Mom, I'd like some mashed potatoes, please. I don't know. Billy's weird. My dad, something's wrong with him, Didn't know. But my friends thought it was cool. So that was neat.
Amanda Welker asked, what was your favorite Goofy-related project?
Still, after all these years, it would probably have to be a Goofy movie, because it was the first time a full-length feature film had starred one of the Fab Five. Mm-hmm. And I saw it with, just a regular audience. And to enjoy it with an audience is really cool. When we do cartoons, we generally don't get a sense of how the people react to it because we're just in a booth with a microphone and a script. And we hope we get a sense of, I think this would be a funny one. And we have a fun time doing it. But you don't get that sense and you don't get the pleasure of hearing other people enjoy it as well.
Right. And Chris Perbelski asks, do you find that the demands of working on such an iconic character limits the opportunities you have to work on other projects outside Disney?
Yes and no. It's such an iconic character. There's a lot of people that still don't know I do other voices because mm-hmm. it's so iconic. But I do audition all the time for other projects and do a lot of commercials as well and background voices. I've been active in the ADR community where I've done, you know, background voices on a lot of movies over the years, back from Beauty and the Beast through Toy Story, Toy Story 2, Bugs Life, Monsters, Inc., you know, other studios, The Lorax and Shrek 2 and, you know, and a lot of live action movies. Yeah, so I keep myself busy, although it seems like mostly I do Disney, but I'm auditioning all the time for other things and get a chance to. And, of course, for Disney, I have another series called The 7D, where I'm Doc of the Seven Dwarves. And of the traditional dwarves, I'm Sleepy of the Seven Dwarves. I'm two of the Seven Dwarves. And but The 7D is a great series, and I'm so pleased also to get to do a different character, because approaching it, I got to come up with a voice. I got to define the character, whereas doing Goofy or a sound match, I'm kind of filling in with something that has already been done. So it's, you know, trying to make it honor what the original artist did to voice this and to kind of give it my spin on things is the challenge.
You know, that 7D show is super fun. Have you watched it, Kevin?
I've not watched it.
Oh, you got to see it. One of the best casts I've ever been involved with, because it has Maurice LaMarche, Billy West, Jess Harnell, Kelly Osbourne in her first series.
Yeah.
Then they have Steve Stanton, D. Bradley Baker, Lee Allen Baker, Kevin Michael Richardson. I mentioned Maurice and Billy West and. And I know I'm forgetting a couple of Steve Stanton, Scotty Menville. We have, Paul Rugg. And it's just a fantastic group of actors. And, wow, it's a good cast and very well written. A lot of fun to do.
That can't come on often enough for my 7-year-old. I mean, she loves it.
Well, they just premiered the second season on Disney XD. Yep. And, tape that if you can. It's a great show. I'm real proud of it.
Oh, that's fantastic! I definitely am gonna have to check that out. What a life and what a career you've had here. You get to be Goofy, Pluto, Doc, Sleepy, Foghorn Leghorn, Sylvester. You played Bugs. You've said you've done Daffy too on Robot Chicken.
Yeah, I did that on Robot Chicken. Yeah,
like all these iconic characters that all just kind of exist in your head now at this point, like that you've gotten to give your voice to. I mean, that's a blessed life. That's got to be something that, you know. That's absolutely just wonderful for you to know that, like, you've been able to be the soundtrack to so many people's childhood.
And, you know, occasionally I'll get to talk to kids in hospitals, and that's where the real magic comes alive, because mm-hmm. I can hear the love that they have for these characters on the phone. And a lot of times they kind of freeze up and they go silent, and I have to carry the conversation because they – you know, they're so overwhelmed. And then we'll get a letter from the mother and says, I don't know why he wouldn't talk to you. He talked for like 3 weeks after you hung up.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you'll call in to a child who's sick in the hospital and talk
exactly.
to them as Goofy.
Yeah. And I remember a call that we got where Wayne Allwine, who voiced Mickey until he passed away in 2009, they got a call. They wanted to talk to Mickey, and a little girl had leukemia and was resisting treatment. She's just done with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And Wayne gets on and says, gosh, you know, when Pluto, he takes his medicine, he feels real good. And just from that sentence, we got a letter later on that the girl's attitude totally changed, and she went into remission. So it's an attitude.
Wow.
That people that and the power that those characters have, you don't take that too lightly, really, when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, they speak to us in ways that no one else can, because you're experiencing just your love of that character for so many years, and you know, I mean, I Pete and I have been sitting here just giddy with excitement as well, like talking to you this whole time. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like a family member in a way. You invite them into your house through the television, mm-hmm. and, you know, in a strange way, they do become kind of your family.
Yeah.
They really are your friends from birth, pretty much.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
You're always watching them.
You know,
yeah, it's like someone you might see in high school, and then you see them 20 years later. It's still, hey, how you doing? It's that friendship is there. Same yeah. thing with these characters.
So, you know, and speaking to, like, the way the Goofy movie, you know, has reached so many people, I got from so many people, like, I can't even name them all, that said to me, when I said, hey, you know, like, submit questions for Bill and whatnot, some people said to me, Kev, see if he remembers how to do the perfect cast.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. It's been a long time since let's see if I can remember that. It was like, all right, Maxie, now get relaxed. All right. And then it was like 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock, tour jeté. I'm a little teapot to wind up and let her fly. Something like that, I think.
12-year-old Kevin screaming in my head right now, like, yes! So, I mean, in closing, Bill, is there anywhere in particular that, you know, folks can go to find you online anything coming up that you got going on?
Yeah, for the last couple of years, I've been teaching via Skype. So anyone that wants to find out about this wacky business or want to find out about voice acting can contact me. I have a new website that's still under construction, but it should be up pretty soon, and you can actually email me right now. The website is vobiz.com, VOBIZ.com, or you can write to BillFarmer@vobiz.com and get in touch with me. And I set up Skype lessons. My son's an engineer and a drummer and a musician, so he's kind of following in that, helps me out with all the technical details. And if you're in the Los Angeles area, I have privates just at my house, you know, where I got a lot of students coming over and just want to help out the next generation as much as I can.
Pete,
so,
I may look into this.
You might have to move to Los Angeles.
Yeah, or you can check out stuff that I put up from time to time. I got updated. It's way overdue. It's BillFarmer.com or on Twitter, @GoofyBill, and I always post stuff on that, so they can follow me that way.
That's great. Pete, was there anything you wanted to add or ask?
No, just, you know, I always wonder if people who have done what you do really realize how much they've influenced so many people, like millions of kids. I mean,
if you do it long enough, you do get a sense of that. And but very few have had the longevity that the old Goof has. I mean, he's started in 1932 and he's still kicking.
No end in sight.
No end in sight, luckily.
All right. So, Bill, I can't thank you enough, from Pete and I both. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Help make the 100th episode of Two Men and the Mouse truly special.
Oh, I'm honored to be on the 100th episode. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you so much. Pete, what an interview with a legend. Like,
loved it.
I'm still, like, shaking. I'm, like, so excited at how awesome that interview was. Like, what an amazing dude. What an amazing career. And a continued career that's going to, you know, go on for years. I mean, really, truly a class act. I loved him.
Yeah, that guy's got the dream job, huh?
He seriously does. And you know what? What better way to celebrate our 100th episode than to talk to a real, true legend and icon of Disney, if you will.
Absolutely.
One of the five pillars of Disney. He's two of the five pillars. He's Goofy and he's Pluto.
I know, right?
He's two of the Fab Five. Unless you're one of those people that counts Daisy instead of Pluto.
Yeah, I'm always confused about that.
No, it's Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy, Pluto. I don't want to hear any of this Daisy garbage.
I love Daisy, but
I love Daisy too, but, you know, like, she's not, you know, she's, you know, she's the wife that comes along with, like, the dude that's in your group of friends.
Okay, interesting.
You know, if you get like that, like, you know, like all your friends come out. One of your friends always brings his wife. She's not really friends with the group, but, like, you know, like, she's part of the group.
Yeah, but that sometimes, like, neuters the conversation in the group.
Well, I don't know. We don't really hear what the Fab Five talks about, like, behind closed doors, so.
That's true. Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Folks, you know, I just really quick, I want to just thank all of you guys for sticking with us for 100 episodes. You know, we touched on it a bit during the two-year anniversary, and, you know, Pete and I really can't thank you guys enough for the support and the love that you guys have shown us. And, you know, we will be doing this for another 100 episodes and 100 more and 100 more. We'll do this forever, right, Pete?
As long as people keep listening.
Absolutely. And you know, more and more of you are listening, so they're going to be getting more and more episodes. And always, you know, keep the feedback coming. Join the Facebook group, facebook.com/group/2menandthemouse. We'd love to hear from you. I will eventually get Pete to actually post in there.
Oh, yeah, you got to walk me through that.
I'll walk you through it. And Pete, just from me to you, thank you so much for, you know, standing with me for, you know, 100 episodes with this. You know, I think we've really kind of carved out our own, you know, little slice of the pie with this show. And this show has, you know, meant a lot to me personally, and I hope it's meant a lot to you as well.
Oh, of course. Nothing but fun. Yeah, and this is one of the best hours of my week.
Absolutely. We always look forward to it all the time. It's a labor, not even a labor of love. It's just an activity of love because,
absolutely.
You know, it's nothing laborious about this show, folks. We love doing it.
Agreed.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for Two Men and the Mouse this week, folks. Thank you so much for joining us for 100 episodes. We could not be more thrilled to have you guys here with us, and we hope you stick around for the next 100. Please give our social media pages some love. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Two Men and the Mouse. We are on Twitter at Two Men and the Mouse, Instagram at Instagram at White Dragon PN. The White Dragon Podcast Network is also on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, and we're on Twitter at White Dragon PN. You can also join our Disney discussion group over in Facebook at facebook.com/groups/Two Men and the Mouse. If you want your questions answered on the show, please send us an email to questions@twomenandthemouse.com. We will have our good buddy Disney Dave Weichert coming in soon to answer those questions, not only about Disney, but about Universal Studios Orlando as well. And if you like the show, folks, please do us the honor of sharing it. Talk it up, tweet it out, give us a rating and review in iTunes. Every little bit helps us out so tremendously, and it is only through your kind words and praise that this show will continue to grow and prosper. Folks, for our good friend and co-host Peter Mandel, check him out at Rogue Comics over in Cranford, New Jersey at 105 North Union Avenue, Cranford, New Jersey 07016. Also, check him out at roguecomics.com, where you can find a link to Pete's eBay store. If you are planning a trip to Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise, Adventures by Disney, any Disney resort throughout the known world, or Aulani out in Hawaii, please look up our good friend and sponsor, Dave Weichert of Magical Travel, who will plan your Disney vacation for you at no additional cost for you. Dave Weichert now also offering services to Universal Resort in Orlando. And folks, if you're going to be renting a stroller in Walt Disney World coming up soon, please check out our newest sponsor, Kingdom Strollers, which will rent you high-end, cushioned strollers at a fraction of the cost of what it's going to cost you to rent them in the parks. You can check them out at kingdomstrollers.com. And also, for all your culinary needs, please always make sure to check out thecookinwookie.com. That's CookinWookie.com. And folks, thank you so much for joining us again this and every week. Pete, any closing words?
Nope. This was a great show.
This was probably my favorite episode of all time. All right. Please, folks, keep the magic alive every day of your lives. And we will see you next week on Two Men and the Mouse.
So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.
If you're standing, please hold on to the handrails and stay clear of the doors until the monorail stops completely and the doors open. If this concludes your visit, we hope you've had a wonderful time and will return home safely. Thank you for traveling with us.